Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, reading from The Scarlet Threads. And today we wrap up part four out of five historical portions of the seven-part book. We're going to be talking about Catholic Croatia in 1941. Yugoslavia is a neutral player in the war efforts of Hitler and others. The country is a blend of cultures and religions. The religions are Roman Catholic, Orthodox, Islam, and Judaism. And one section of Yugoslavia, Croatia, which is quite Catholic, welcomes the German invasion, and with the Germans begins to turn on its fellow countrymen. Archbishop Stepinac, and forgive me if I'm pronouncing that improperly, he's the vicar general of the army in Croatia. You'll need to know that name, even if I said it wrong. An army which begins to slaughter mercilessly all enemies of the faith. As you know from modern headlines, or you could have read back then, it's called ethnic cleansing. Ethnic cleansing. This is what Adrian Pigot in Freedom's Foe, the Vatican, page 44, says about this. And I'm quoting, "A favorite method of ethnic cleansing was to drive the Serbs inside an Orthodox church." And remember, this is Roman Catholicism versus their enemy, their nemesis, Orthodoxy, Greek Orthodox, which becomes Russian Orthodox, Serbian Orthodox, and so on. They hated them publicly before the world. They don't talk about that now. We'll talk about the transformation later. But no, there's hatred here. Drive the Serbs inside of an Orthodox church, bolt the doors, and then set the building on fire. Hundreds of thousands of Croatia's Serbs, Muslims, Jews, and bewildered gypsies were rounded up and condemned to death or torture or mutilation. Orthodox churches were burnt down. In some cases, sons were compelled to assault their own mothers before the altars. In winter, victims were driven onto the frozen rivers and were plunged to death through holes made in the ice. Expectant mothers had their bodies ripped open by Romanist daggers. At a place called Nevesinje, a Serb family of father, mother, and four children were captured. The mother and children were kept together and starved for a week. And then one day, a savory dish of roast meat was brought into them. Oh, naturally, they ate ravenously enough. And then they were callously informed that they had just eaten some of their husband and father. Peter Brzyka, a law student who had attended, I'm still quoting here, had attended a Franciscan college, was a member of the Catholic Order of Crusaders. He was one of the Quislings in control of the concentration camp at Jasenovac. Bets were made as to who would kill the largest number of inmates. And with a specially sharp butcher's knife, Brzyka cut the throats of no fewer than 1,360 Yugoslav prisoners, his own countrymen. Having been proclaimed the prize winner of the competition, he was elected to be king of the cutthroats. These are some of the actions which the agents of the Holy Catholic Church use in their 20th century efforts to stamp out their rivals. Even the Germans and the Italians were nauseated by what the Croats did. Politically, Croatia has its roots in Hungary, where for eight centuries it was controlled but legally independent. Then came the Ottoman rule, 1526, Turk rule until 1699, and the Habsburgs until 1868. Then it was back to Hungary. And then in 1918, Croatia joined with the Serbs and Slovenes. Later, this whole amalgamation was known as Yugoslavia. In April of 1941, through the workings of the Vatican at a most opportune time, Croatia took advantage of the situation and declared itself an independent state. And it was immediately recognized, of course, by Germany and Italy. Its leader was Ante Pavelić, the head of a fascist terrorist organization called Ustasa. Extreme brutality, violence, and priestly involvement were the trademarks of this group. In 1945, Croatia was joined with Yugoslavia as a People's Republic, communist style, under Tito. And from then until 1980, it was relatively stable. And then the vacuum of power created by Tito's death led to the predicament that the 1990 people were reading about daily. But we don't want to talk about modern history. Let's go back. 1943, Collier's Magazine. Remember Collier? Some of you more mature folks. Collier's in September painted the picture of Pavelić as a guilty war criminal. Indeed, he was. And he fled when Nazism and fascism collapsed. First, he ran to Catholic Argentina, then to Catholic Paraguay. From there, he went to Catholic Spain. Oh, he lived and died a loyal Roman Catholic. And because of this one man, 700,000 men, women, and children lost their lives. He was aided by this Archbishop Stepinac, also accused as a war criminal. On April 28, 1941, Stepinac writes a personal letter asking the Croatian clergy to support and defend Pavelić's Croatia. When, later, Pavelić is running for his life, Stepinac takes charge of the government himself. The ethnic cleansing syndrome of the 40s in Croatia is made clear by a statement made by Catholic Minister of Justice Zanić on June 2, 1941. I'm quoting, "This state, our country, is only for the Croats. There are no ways and means which we will not use to make our country truly ours, to clean it of all Orthodox Serbs." End of quote. Ways and means? What are the ways and means? How about burying people alive? That was one way. Concentration camps run by clergy, terrorist raids, starvation, deprivation, public hangings, crucifixions. Hey, when you shock a Nazi, you're pretty shocking. The Nazis were aghast at the Croats. Now, is there any sign of shame over these incidents at the time? Doesn't seem like it. In fact, the resurrection of Croatia as a separate nation is said to be equal to that of Christ. And I quote, "The great son, S-O-N, of the Croatian people returned and gave them their liberty and ancient rights. This is the work of God. The Lord did it all." Christ and the Ustashi and Christ and the Croatians marched together through history. Still quoting, "Our Holy Savior will help us in the future as he has done until now. That's why the new Ustashi Croatia will be Christ's, ours, and no one else's." End of quote. Now, the Catholic Croatians, allied to Adolf Hitler, are represented by this priestly voice. Quote, "Until now, God spoke through papal encyclicals, and, well, people closed their ears. Now God has decided to use other methods, led by Hitler. The sermons will be heard with the help of cannons, machine guns, tanks, and bombers." End of quote. Well, Catholic Croatia did not die at the end of World War II. It reappeared in terrorist groups all over the world, awaiting its chance to resurface. But the old religious hatreds that resurfaced in our decade, that was the 1990s when I wrote, are not what Croatia had expected, but we'll talk about that again later. So we're now left with a painful but familiar question. What can we expect of Catholic power in the future? Are there Catholic minorities in many lands waiting their chance to take power? Is the Catholic Church in this 20th century, as I wrote this, still willing to be coercive and force itself on the populations it inhabits? Has it learned from its former conquests that people eventually will not be forced? Well, in partial answer, I have to offer the words of one of Britain's all-time greats of Romanism, Monsignor Ronald Knox, author, biblical scholar. He died in 1957, so we're getting into that century even more. Knox was especially strong in Roman ways as he had converted from Anglicanism. So I'm quoting his words now from a book called The Belief of Catholics. Quote, "Is it just, since thought is free, to penalize in any way differences of speculative outlook? Ought not every church, however powerful, to act as a body corporate within the state, exercising no form of coercion except that of exclusion from its own spiritual privileges? Well," he says, "it is very plain, and it's true, that this has not been the Catholic theory in times past. There has been, in Catholic nations, a definite alliance between the secular and the spiritual power. And so, to be sure, has there been among Protestant nations. But may it be understood that in our enlightened age, Catholics would repudiate the notion of any such alliance in the future? Well, it must be freely admitted that this is not so." Still quoting, "You cannot bind over the Catholic Church as the price of your adhesion to her doctrines to waive all right of invoking the secular arm in defense of her own principles. The circumstances in which such a possibility could be realized are indeed sufficiently remote. You have to assume, for practical purposes, a country with a very strong Catholic majority, the overwhelming body of the nation. Probably, though not certainly, you would have to assume that the non-Catholic minority are innovators, newly in revolt against the Catholic system, with no ancestral traditions, no vested interest to be respected. Given such circumstances, is it certain that the Catholic government of the nation would have no right to insist on Catholic education being universal, which is a form of coercion, and even to deport or imprison those who unsettle the minds of its subjects with new doctrines?" Knox goes on, and this is lengthy but very important to us. I'm quoting now Ronald Knox. "It is certain that the Church would claim that right for the Catholic government, even if considerations of prudence forbade its exercise in fact. The Catholic Church will not be one amongst the philosophies. Her children believe not that her doctrines may be true, but that they are true, and consequently part of the normal makeup of a man's mind. Not even a parent can legitimately refuse such education to his child. They recognize, however, that such truths, unlike mathematical axioms, can be argued against, that simple minds can easily be seduced by the sophistries of plausible error. They recognize further that the divorce between speculative belief and practical conduct is a divorce in thought, not in fact, that the unchecked development of false theories in ethical aberrations, for example, Anabaptism yesterday, Bolshevism, communism today, which are a menace even to the social order." You see how he puts conservative Christianity and communism in the same package. Moving on here. And for these reasons, a body of Catholic patriots entrusted with the government of a Catholic state will not shrink even from repressive measures in order to perpetuate the secure domination of Catholic principles among their fellow countrymen. Still quoting, it is frequently argued that if Catholics have at the back of their system such notions of toleration, it is unreasonable in them to complain when a modern state restricts, in its turn, the political or educational liberty which they themselves wish to enjoy. What is sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. The contention is ill-conceived, for when we demand liberty in the modern state, we are appealing to its own principles and not to ours. Whew. It's Ronald Knox. I'm telling you, he's a major player at that time in Catholic thinking. The heart sinks to know that this 20th century scholar of Rome unabashedly proclaims, like Malcolm X, that Rome is willing to gain power and keep power by any means necessary. That Rome equates the great saints of the Anabaptist movement with the communist menaces. That neither parents or educators would be able to keep a Catholic-dominated nation from forcing its children to learn the Catholic ways in the schools of the land. That to be a Catholic is to have normal thinking processes. All other thinking is subnormal. That all Catholic talk about democracy and liberty is geared only toward the eventual emancipation of Catholicism, after which time all democracy and liberty will cease. I must sound naive. Of course Rome believes this. The planet is dotted still in the 21st century with countries where this very state of affairs exists. Believers in Jesus, awaken, come out of her. Don't share in her program lest you share in her eventual condemnation. Knox's book was criticized in some quarters, but never banned from Catholic thinking. It stands as a warning to us all. Well, the great wars are over for the moment, but the battle is far from won. Rome continues to meddle in the affairs of states, great and small, one of the smallest, yet one of the greatest, true believer being Israel. Next time we'll have to see what's going on there, because as I've said from the beginning, there are threads, scarlet threads, that run through the fabric of Babylon. You can find those threads in every generation. Well, that's the conclusion of part four. In the final historical section, part five, we're going to trace the Babylonian Roman institution from the late 40s through its transformation in the 60s. Just about everybody listening to my voice probably is having serious trouble with all the things I'm saying here. You've hung on, and I appreciate you hanging on this long. But you're wondering, how could he be saying all that about my special, precious neighbors next door who happen to be Roman Catholic? And the Catholic Church just isn't doing that kind of stuff. There's a peace man. The Pope is just after peace. He goes all over. Oh, come on. You need to stay with me in part five, talking about the transformation that took place. The Roman Catholic Church you see today is not the Roman Catholic Church you have seen in this history. And this history is just common knowledge, by the way. I haven't made up a thing. It's all out there. You'll see what happened and the tactics that it's using now to become greater and greater one day. Well, in later parts, parts six and seven, I'm going to give my own experiences among the Romanists, and I'm going to comment about Romanist influence among Protestants and how Protestantism needs to take a look at itself too. Well, that's all for this time. Thank you so much. We won't do the Scarlet Threads in our very next session or two. It's time to take another break. Actually, we're right in time now for our music section. On the seventh day of the week, we do that. And then Well, it just so happens that my quarterly has come in, you know, the one that I use regularly here with a series of different preachers. We'll do two or three of those, all of that before we go back to Scarlet Thread. So take a break, and we'll give chance to the other folks to catch up with you. But thank you so much. God bless you. Have a good day. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun, and Lord willing, we will talk again real soon. Bye-bye.